We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, BronxPinstripes.com proudly brings to you the most exciting Yankees podcast in the world, George's Box.
All the dramatic things I've ever seen. George's Box. Goodness gracious.
Welcome back to George's Box. JJ is traveling for work again. He's a busy man hanging out in the Delta Lounge, or that sounds like a Yankee Stadium suite, but some sort of American Airlines lounge or a Southwest lounge. Back here with Stanzo filling in. And I just want to take a step back. The Yankees are 15-7 without Gerrit Cole. And Stanzo, if I took 1,000 Yankee fans and polled them before the season, how many of them do you think would sign up for this? Because I would have said like 998 of them, right?
Definitely not me. I'll tell you that much. I mean, I thought that maybe they could tread water, but the fact that they have the most wins in baseball right now without Cole and with a lot of things still not going right for them is crazy.
And you can add on to that, and we're going to talk about Judge, but considering almost getting nothing from him save for a few big hits, obviously that double in Toronto and a couple home runs, not much from him. But I just think we need to kind of give them a pat on the back. We'll talk about each of the individual games, but when you think about a season, we're 22 games in, that's when you can maybe kind of start to make some proclamations. This is as good. I mean, to me, this is best case scenario sitting here as we're getting towards the end of April.
You couldn't ask for more than this. I mean, obviously, you know, there's some games you maybe wish turned out differently, but 15-7, like you said, I don't know anyone that wouldn't have signed up for that coming into the year.
And anybody that wouldn't have is just a pessimistic prick. So I'm just going to disregard whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
crazy stats. So I was jumping around a little bit today, combination of watching on TV and the radio. And on the radio, Justin Shackle said, or maybe it was Emmanuel Barberi, said Yankees are 15-2 when they score three or more runs. Obviously, if you do the math, they're 0-5 when they score two or less. I mean, that tells me the pitching has been fantastic. But getting shut out twice at home offensively already, like, a little concerning there.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, there's definitely been some bad games from the lineup. I want to – not that I would throw out yesterday, because obviously some of these guys, you know, who we'll get into, you know, the Judge, Rizzo, Glabers of the world, that lineup also, like, we had Trent Grisham batting six. Like, you're trying to get Glaber's head right with Jamai Jones. So, I don't want to throw it out, but it's like I can't put too much stock into what was easily the worst lineup they've thrown out all year getting shut out.
It's a good point. That's as close as they've gotten to a punt lineup. I think when you have like one of those emotional Friday night, late night wins that they have, and if there's a day game the next day, a lot of times you see a lineup like that and they're a little flat. So that didn't shock me that they had that lineup that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, not at all.
But yeah, let's get into it. So Friday was, I mean, you talked about it. You called him a five and fly guy. To me, that was vintage Clark Schmidt. 5 1/3, one earned. There was traffic all night, but he worked out of it really well. Got up to 7 Ks, immediately ran out of gas in the sixth. But like me and you talked about a couple of weeks ago, I'll sign up for that every time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Clark is a back-end starter, but he could be a good one. And, you know, on Friday, he was good. I was watching. I was kind of in and out between following on my phone and watching the game. But early on, he had, you know, some long counts, long at-bats where the pitch count was kind of getting up. But he was able to get the strikeouts later on in the game and get out of it, which was good to see.
Yeah, there were two on, and there was two on in the first, and then I think it won in the second inning. They had the Rays at first and third, no out, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, all right, I'll sign up for one.
Yep.
One right now, and he gets out of it, and he ends up going, you know, taking a shutout into the sixth inning. He got a lot of ground balls, and what I like about him is like he doesn't really walk anybody.
No, it's good, and that really has become like it's almost like my old man yells at cloud, where it's just like I can't stand watching guys with walks. Before the pitch clock, it was pitchers that work slow, and then obviously guys with walks. Not that I like to go see a guy go out and give up seven hits, but I'll much rather watch a guy who's pounding the strike zone and making guys get hits, as opposed to, you know, watching sometimes if, you know, Heel has no control and he walks six guys in a start. I can't stand that.
Especially a team like the Rays that's fast on the bases, that steals all the time. Like, you cannot give them free passes because Kevin Cash is just going to send them around.
Exactly.
And then Friday, you know, Friday I'm sitting there. So I'm heading up on the train Friday, and I'm like, all right, we're coming off an off day. The Rays are doing a bullpen game. Like, the offense is going to come out on fire. It gets to the, you know, seventh inning stretch, and I realized I'm sitting there and I'm like, I've been here for 15 innings this season and I haven't seen the Yankees get a runner to third base. And I was getting to a dark place.
Yeah, that's tough. That's crazy.
Obviously the seventh inning, massive, got a little bit lucky, right? With Verdugo, you know, reaching on an error, Cabrera, they might've given him a hit, but to me that was an error. And the Soto home run. So we kind of talked about this, but when you buy a ticket package, you know, 10 game plan, 15 game plan, whatever they are, you are buying that package to get to moments like that, right? For the stadium to explode. I mean, he hits that ball. People are running up and down the aisles. The sirens are going off. The lights are flashing. And it was like, I knew immediately in that moment, this is going to be a top five regular season game already this year.
Oh, yeah, no, you can't beat it, especially Soto, too. It's not just that he is so good, and obviously the results are incredible. You know, I saw coming into today, he had like a 469 on base percentage, which is insanity. But it's just the way in which he does it. He's a showman on the field. You know, feel every pitch, every at bat, he's in like locked into a battle with the pitcher. He's talking to the umpire. And then obviously the celebration of that home run where he turns to Judge, he turns to the bench. The guy is literally a Broadway star on baseball's biggest stage right now. And it's so fun to watch.
That's perfectly said. I've never seen somebody come in and fit in so seamlessly. And we talked about that, like, you know, Teixeira got here and sucked for the first month. Stan got here and sucked for the first month. Usually when you bring in a star, they're getting comfortable, that they're just not. And he is just from day one. I've never seen somebody so comfortable, like you said, as a Broadway star playing in New York.
Absolutely.
So fun to watch. And I love that he was just shouting into the dugout. Like, he wanted everybody else to be a part of that moment. And there was a lot, you know, before they brought him in, it was, oh, you know, he's a little bit selfish. And there was rumblings about the locker room in San Diego. All I've seen is an A-plus team player.
It's the total opposite. Like, I think, honestly, anyone saying that was just salty that he was going to be a Yankee and trying to bring him down, you know, for any reason possible. I remember even in the Toronto series, you know, there's a pitching change and he's chatting it up with the bullpen, like in the middle of it. Like, he turns it, he's like, he's just BSing with our guys. And I think we were like down a run or two at that point. It's just like, this guy, like, he loves being here. And yeah, he seems like an A-plus teammate from everything we could see.
He has been on his best behavior. And I'm sure part of it is, look, the man wants to get paid. It seems like Clark made some comments talking about giving him a blank check. It seems like the price is going up every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I guess, you know, you would sign for it to be this way, right? I mean, we've kind of said coming into this year that one thing about why you would want Soto here is it's a trial for both sides, right? Not that I ever thought he wouldn't produce here, because he's just an incredible player. We've seen him, you know, drag the Nationals to the World Series as a 20-year-old. So I knew he would handle the pressure, but it's just, does he like it? Like, does he fit in? And he has shown so far in a short time that, yes, he absolutely does.
And people made a big deal about the prospects and, you know, the pitching that we gave up with King and Brito and Vasquez. But what you're, to me, even though it's just the 1 year, what you're paying for is that 1 year exclusive recruiting tour. It's like, you know, if you're a college, bringing somebody onto the campus for a year and showing them around. I mean, to act like the Yankees aren't going to have a massive head start in free agency, you just be silly, because clearly we're making an impression.
Absolutely. And that too, I was going back and forth with Yankee fans before. Like, I swear there's some people that are so miserable, they just want us to do nothing. They were just convinced that the 2023 team was going to be 2024, no matter what they did to the roster. And they're like, well, even if you get Soto, it doesn't fix it. And the way I would always respond to them is, no one move was going to fix the Yankees, but no one move could improve the Yankees as much as Juan Soto did. And that's shown so far.
100%. Even for a year, it was a no-brainer. He's been incredible. Bullpen, not so much. You know, on Friday when I was there, Hamilton, who was kind of supposed to be, I think, the number two behind Holmes, he made this way closer than it had to be. Allowed two runs in the eighth. It easily could have been more. Very, very shaky from him. Clay does come in and gets into a little trouble. So I wanted to ask you about this. So I'm there, and you know, they have this thing where they're arguing about whether it was an infield fly, and Glaber and Volpe and Judge are all, you know, converging on that ball. Kevin Cash is arguing. Boone is arguing. Did you, I guess, if you were watching and had a good view on TV, like who did you blame for that ball that kind of fell on the triangle?
I don't know. I guess you would maybe want to say it's Judge's ball just because he's coming in. But at the same time, it was in pretty far. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they just got lucky that they were able to get the out at third. But yeah, no, I don't know if I blame any one person in particular. That ball has to be caught, obviously.
Yeah, and as a guy that was probably, whatever it was, two or three Goose Island tall boys deep, I instinctively blame Glaber because it's so easy to just blame Glaber.
Right.
For everything. But they were, you know, they do escape and very lucky. I mean, the ball that – the double play that ended the game was a pretty hard hit ball right at Volpe. Mm-hmm. He steps on second to wrap that up. So Saturday. So the first highlight or moment I saw from Saturday was people online waiting to get in the game at 8. It was like 9 in the morning. To get this Judge bobblehead. And it got me thinking, why, when they do a giveaway, just give a bobblehead to everybody that comes in? Do 40,000. Like, where are they getting this first 18,000? I just want to know where that number comes from.
I guess, is it just based on what the sponsor pays for, right? Like, I know that'd
be a good one.
TikTok one. So, yeah. So I guess it's just like whatever they pay for. But yeah, I don't know. They have to have some kind of better system, because I was seeing tweets about the lines and stuff, and even the last episode I was on, I know we were talking about opening day and the experience of getting in. They have to figure something out, man, because it's been brutal. I would say, honestly, post COVID, I think getting into the stadium for big events, whether it be a bobblehead, you know, or Red Sox game, whatever, has been pretty tough.
And you have people that are really into it. Like, I know I'm not a Star Wars guy, but there's a lot of people that want the Star Wars bobbleheads and the action figures and all that. And, you know, if you're a family, and let's say you have two or three kids, I don't think a family should have to sit out there and get to the game 5 hours early, standing in the hot sun in the summer, waiting to get one of these, you know, $20 action figures. So just make 40,000 of them and just give them to everybody that comes in. So I have with the Friday plan, they do a lot of giveaways on Fridays. And it's like, you know, I want the Costanza bobblehead. I think that'd be awesome, but I'm not getting there at 3 o'clock on a Friday.
No, I can't. Yeah, I can't. I don't even go for the bobbleheads anymore just because I know, like, I'll try and go based on some giveaways. Like, I got a cool John and Susan shirt last year, which was nice, but it was like a Wednesday night game or something. So I had no issue getting it. But yeah, my heart breaks for these little kids. I'm sure how many kids went, you know, thinking they're going to get a Judge bobblehead. And what really pisses me off is, like, you know, if it's someone our age and they're still super into the bobbleheads, like, that's fine. Like, we're actual Yankee fans, whatever. But, you know, so many assholes are just going to list it on eBay for $120 tomorrow. And it's like, you shouldn't be prioritizing, which I don't know how you would figure it's that terrible. Out, but there's no way to do it. It just sucks.
That's so weak. It was, I saw it, and this might have been a fake. I hope this was fake, but I saw somebody listed one of the Judge ones for $1,000.
That's
on eBay, which is a fucking joke.
That's insane. That's insane.
Really silly. And then that leads right into the Sterling ceremony. A lot of people were giving the Yankees shit for giving him a TV. I don't know. I would take a 90-inch TV. He said he's, you know, he wants to retire and watch the games on TV. He's got a brand new TV to watch them on. I don't know why we caught so much heat for that.
Yeah, I thought it was more like tongue in cheek. Also, I also saw, I don't know anything. I know TVs in general are cheap now. Apparently, that's one of the better ones you could get. The only thing I thought, and maybe they will do it at some point, was someone said, you know, they really should give him a plaque in Monument Park. So I don't know if that's going to come someday or not. But that was the one thing I really would have liked to have seen.
I think it's Mel Allen. He was before our time, obviously. Yeah. He has a plaque, right?
Yeah, I'm almost positive he does. Yeah.
Okay, and Shepard obviously does. That wouldn't shock me. As for the game itself, just what a snooze fest. I mean, Nestor was awesome. There's not much to talk about from the lineup perspective. Nobody hit. You know, you were kind of mentioning just a kind of a slapdick lineup they threw together for that.
Yeah, easily the worst line. I would say probably the only lineup all year they've had that you could really qualify as a punt lineup. You know, they give Glaber a day and try and get him going. So Jamai Jones is starting. You know, Trent Grisham was in the six hole. So yeah, I don't want to put too much stock into that lineup, but obviously Nestor dealing against a team that wasn't the Marlins is definitely a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, it seems like Nestor is picking it up a little bit. I think his ERA is around 3.4 or 3.5. If he can stay here, I'd like a little bit more consistently, because it seems like it's either 8 shutout, 7 shutout, or he gets lit up. But if he can be a 3.5 guy, I think everybody's signing up for that.
Absolutely.
But the one thing, so everybody has their like major concern, whether it's the bullpen, whether it's injuries. My big concern is this team has too many long stretches, whether it's the first 6 innings of a game or getting shut out, where it seems like they have these long stretches where everyone's inept, mm-hmm. and then they explode. I don't like seeing, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 innings in a row of not scoring. It freaks me out a little bit.
It's weird that the whole lineup kind of does that. I mean, it was even happening in Toronto. Soto kind of snapped them out of it, you know, with the homer.
Yeah.
In that game. And then the same thing was happening yesterday into today, obviously. They have that big inning at the end against Savali. But yeah, it is very weird. That's always the one thing my dad says. He's like, the 90s dynasty, one thing that would happen is that there was always at least one guy. So it was like, you know, if Jeter and Bernie were slumping, then Tino was hot or Brocious was hot. So he's like, these guys, they just tend to collectively slump. And I don't understand how it happens so often.
It's a little bit freaky. And, you know, for me, if they're on the road and they're facing a Luis Castillo or some stud mm-hmm. starting pitcher and they get shut out, that's one thing. But to get shut out at home when you got the short porch, you got Judge and Soto, this might be a little bit obnoxious, but I don't think they should ever get shut out at home ever.
No, I don't disagree with you. I really don't. Again, especially, you know, if it's some stud pitcher, like you said, like, yeah, maybe some, you know, sometimes they're going to have unhittable stuff. But yeah, no, I completely agree.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Time to get to the 6'7", 290-pound elephant in the room that is our boy number 99, Aaron Judge. He took a golden sombrero on Saturday. He was booed, and it was funny because some people were freaking out, like, oh, you can't boo Judge, the captain. And I don't know if these people just don't remember or weren't watching, but in 2004, when A-Rod got here, Derek Jeter went on an 0-for-32 in April, and he got booed, I would say, from at-bats like 25 to 32 of that stretch at home. And it was shocking at the time. I remember it, but to me, it was very easily explainable that Jeter had been the center of attention since he got here in 96 through, you know, 2003. A-Rod gets here, and it clearly freaked Jeter out. He was uncomfortable. He's kind of admitted this even since then, and it took him a while to settle in and get going. He eventually did, obviously, because he's Derek Jeter. But to me, like, that's what's happening to Aaron Judge. From 2017 on with the Chambers, he's been the center of attention, the center of every marketing pitch, social media, bobbleheads. He got the $360 million contract, and now he's Robin, and I just think he's having trouble adjusting to that.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. I don't know. I know, you know, early on I was thinking it's because he missed some time in the spring, you know, and he was just kind of a tick off. He was still taking his walks. But this week he really, you know, obviously aside from the game-winning hit in Toronto, which I was kind of hoping would spark him a little bit, he's just looking like he looks like 2016 Judge. Like that he's susceptible to that low and away breaking ball again. And still today, Savali threw him one absolute meatball and he just like popped it up behind the plate, you know, in foul territory. It's just like he's not only now is he not hitting the mistake pitches, he's not even seeing pitches now. So I'm definitely this week made me more concerned. Again, I'm sure he will snap out of it, but I would have thought by now he would have at least started to get going a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a little bit scary. And to be clear, I don't want to make it like I'm cutting on Judge. I mean, my favorite athlete of all time. Like, if this could happen to Derek Jeter, it could happen to anybody.
Absolutely.
Is kind of my point. And I was – so they were talking about when he had the ab injury or the sore abs. Some people were saying oblique. But seeing him pull the monster home run he pulled in Cleveland and he pulled the double in Toronto, the fact that he's not having trouble pulling the ball tells me that the oblique or the abs are probably healthy. I'd say I'm 80% sure this is mental, but you got to figure like against the Athletics, this is a prime time to get going at home.
Yeah, hope this series hopefully should wake him up.
So that's what we got to hope for. I haven't looked at these. Probably couldn't even name two starters on the Athletics. If I'm being honest, I haven't looked at those pitching matchups, but this will be a prime opportunity for him. The other thing with Judge that I do like that they're doing is he's getting two DH days a week. JJ and I were very nervous about him playing center every day. And I know Grisham's been kind of a zero when he plays center, but I do like that they're getting him off his feet.
No, absolutely. That's the approach I would take too. I mean, Judge also hasn't sat a game. I wouldn't be surprised if that's coming up because, you know, like we were talking about before we started, I don't know how many games they have and how many days, but there's no off day for the next 2 weeks coming up. So I wouldn't even be surprised if we see Judge sit at some point. But yeah, the DH days, I like that approach as well.
At Milwaukee, it's a dome, so I'm thinking if that's turf, that could be, you know, against an NL team that we don't really compete with, that could be a good opportunity. They, you know, Toronto's turf, but yeah, obviously you don't want to sit them against right. them. So maybe keep an eye out for that this weekend. But Sunday, Heel, our boy, fantastic 5 2/3. He only had the one unearned run, which was kind of his fault, the balk and his own error. 9 Ks. 2.75. He looks like a frontline starter to me.
Command looked really good today. Obviously, he walked the two last guys right before he came out, which kind of sucks. So the wheels came off a little bit at the end. But no, he was unbelievable today. And obviously, the one run kind of sucked where he throws the ball into center and then balks. But it was good to see that, you know, it seems like he's like battling with himself mentally, you know, whether it's, you know, the calls he thinks he's not getting or anything like that. So it was good to see. After he balked in that run, I was like, whoa, is he gonna explode here a little bit? And he just settled in nicely after that, which was great to see.
Hi, Jay, go ahead.
I just want to ask you guys the question of, do you trust Heel? You know, he's looked electric at times, but we've also seen him get flustered in big moments and the lack of control. Is he a guy that you would trust in a playoff series?
I do. My answer is yes. I'll go first. From, you know, he has gotten flustered, but in Toronto – at home against Toronto that Sunday game, he figured it out. Even the start at the Dome, the Sky Dome, he was flustered and he kept it to only, I think, two or three runs. I say yes. What do you say?
Yeah, I think the fact that he's going to have the whole season to figure it out, like if he came up in, like, say, August and this was like a 7-8 start stretch and the playoffs started tomorrow, I probably would say no, just because I think the risk of him walking a ton of guys and them having a monster inning is too high. But if he continues on this path all year, absolutely. And he has perfect playoff stuff. I mean, we talked about it last time I was on.
And at a higher level, I just, like, you're not going to have five sure thing Garrett Coles in rotation. You need guys like this that are those high upside, high ceiling guys that step up and dominate to win in October. Like, he's a guy that if he has a dominant postseason, like, that's one of the things that would have to happen for the Yankees to win the World Series,
I think.
So he's been good. So my answer is yes. And when I look at him, he's got the size, he's got the velocity, he's got the stuff. I think he's figuring out the mental stuff. I think in an ideal world, if you have you know, Cole, Rodon, him and Stroman, 1 through 4, like that's going to be pretty tough if they're all healthy.
No, that's a good four. And I mean, obviously we don't know what Cashman does at the deadline. And then, you know, with this team, you can never count out injuries, but if that was our four, I would feel very good about it.
With the offense, we've talked about how streaky they are. They had one of their, you know, good innings where Verdugo breaks it open with the bases loaded knock. Even, you know, Jose Trevino gets that knock up the middle and then Waldo jumps in. Very, very streaky. What will take it? Dennis Santana made this way too close. So when I think about this bullpen and what Aaron Boone is doing, you know, it reminds me, you're a college freshman. Right. When you show up on day one, it's August, everyone's moving in, you're knocking on doors, you're trying to get a feel for who you want to be friends with, who's cool, right? Can you talk a little bit about how that went for you?
Yeah, so for me, you know, I got really lucky. I met my friends pretty much right away. But in this hypothetical scenario, you know, I'm not meeting many people, right? Maybe, you know, I have one or two kids that I enjoy spending time with, you know, Clay Holmes, Ian Hamilton, you know, but I know that my first semester friends are going to be different than my second semester friends. So we need a big trade deadline, right? So if we can get, you know, maybe like a closer, and that bumps everybody down. And then the kids that I'm hanging out with 24/7 that maybe are, you know, I'm getting a little annoyed with, then I only see them a couple times a week. So I enjoy hanging out with them more. And then the whole thing just falls into line.
Your high leverage guys, those are the guys you're getting breakfast with, you're going out on Friday nights, you know, all that, you're going to the gym with them. And then, you know, your lower leverage guys, maybe if you're bored and nobody's going out, you know, that's who you text. To me, that's what Boone is doing right now. He's knocking on these doors, whether Santana, Ferguson, all these different guys, Hamilton, like you said, Gonzalez, and he is just taking this time to try to figure out who he can trust and who he wants to hang out with. I mean, Stanzo, is that how you see it too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like to every once in a while do like a bullpen trust tree, just like where my head's at. And I was going to do one today. I've been showing some love to Dennis Santana before today. I think it's kind of like when you're hanging out with a kid in college and you think he might be cool, and then you drink with him for the first time and he's super annoying. And you're like, ooh, all right, maybe you're not going to be my best friend. He's going to be a tier two friend. But yeah, I mean, there's been concerning moments from everyone. I would say, you know, even for all the complaints about Clay, he's obviously your number one trusted guy, you know, just has the stuff, has the experience. And then everyone else, I mean, if Dennis Santana gets that last out, you know, the rally was kind of more of just a, you know, it was like a bloop single and a walk. So if he gets Ahmed Rosario, I'm probably on here waxing poetic about Dennis Santana. Instead, he gives up 3 runs. So I think you nailed it, Nick. It's just a trial and error period for Boone. Like now we're seeing Luke Weaver in high leverage spots. I mean, I know they were it was a close game when they brought him in, and he was really supposed to be more of a mop-up guy. So he's kind of just searching for anything right now.
So is Weaver just going to be the long man? Is that kind of what they're doing with him? Because he seems like he's going two innings at a time usually.
Usually, but the last 2 days he just pitched back to back. So that, yeah. I think Nelson said on the broadcast today that was the first time, and he only went 1 1/3 today.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they even know what they're doing with him.
It's weird, and I'm glad you brought up that it was just a couple of bloop hits, because I always harp on this, is like you need relievers that are just going to come in and pump strikeouts, because this is the shit that happens.
Absolutely.
So it's a little bit concerning there, and that brings me to Tommy Canley. We'll get to the injury updates, but again, in February or March, they're like, he's not injured. He's just doing a slow build up. They said he still needs to keep doing, he's not ready for a rehab assignment, I guess is the summary. And like, it went from, oh, Canley would be nice to have, to like, they fucking need him now.
Yeah, no, they need him too. And I was laughing because the Yes injury graphic too, I don't know if you saw another guy that we need back, Scott Efros, his injury update, and Meredith ended up explaining it, but the injury update was, in quotes, minor hiccup in rehab. And I'm like, that's like the most modern day Yankees injury update ever. Minor hiccup.
Reminds me of the foot stuff with Luke Voit. And that's the thing about Tommy John is, you know, normally it should only take whatever 14 months, but there's almost always a setback. I remember with Montgomery, he had like a back setback when he was coming back. Seve had a couple of setbacks with his hamstring because you're so focused on the elbow, and I think you compensate and injure other areas. So with Efros, that's what I would guess. It's some other body part.
Probably.
And then Lou Trevino, I kind of forgot about him, to be honest. Do you know where he's at?
And I have no idea. I kind of forgot that we even re-signed him. So you just said it, to be honest with you. Yeah, no, so I haven't seen an update on him in a while.
If we're being realistic, if we can have those two at the break coming back ready to go for the second half, I think we sign up for that.
I mean, the other good news, too, is that I know last time I had said that I was kind of just banking on Cashman to figure it out, and some of these guys figure it out because they always do. The last couple years, we've been talking about trading for a frontline starter, or, you know, we need a number, like a cleanup hitter in the lineup at the trade deadline. The bullpen is the area where you absolutely can overhaul it at the trade deadline. So that's kind of the saving grace. It's just more so how do we get from point A to point B, you know, because there's a lot of baseball between now and July 31st.
Yeah, you got to get there. And that is a great call out. I mean, we got Kenyon Middleton last year at the deadline, who was pretty solid. And I don't know if they gave up cash or a note, but they basically got him for free from what I remember.
I wonder if there's any chance that Cashman makes, you know, an April or May trade. I mean, the Wandy Peralta deal 2 years ago, that was, I think, right around now. Like, Talkman played the first couple of weeks and they made that deal. So I wouldn't put it past him that he's already looking to add an arm to this bullpen ASAP.
Yeah, I'd be all over it. And like you said, the prospect cost usually isn't huge with these relievers. And I do, you know, it's almost become the easy thing or the fun thing or the cool thing to just bag on Boone. But I do think this has been his best year so far in terms of bullpen management. I mean, you look at today, you look at Sunday, Holmes wasn't available and he finds a way to finish the game. He managed the pen good on Friday. I just think considering what his options have been, I feel like he's mostly pushed the right buttons.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel, and again, I don't know if it's just because we're 15-7 and this is just an ignorant fan statement, but I do feel like he's going a little bit more trying to give guys clean innings based a little bit on feel as opposed to, all right, this is this guy's lane. So no matter what happens, you know, with these first two, I'm going to make a pitching change here. Like, it seems like if a guy's going well, he'll let him go a little bit, no, kind of almost no matter what the matchups are.
So what do you think of, like, clearly he has a rule nobody goes 3 days in a row. Like, today would have, or Sunday would have been a prime Holmes day. He doesn't do it. Do you agree with that rule? Because, I mean, Mariano used to go 3 days in a row. Like, Girardi used to do that. Even Chapman early on sometimes. Like, what do you think of the no 3 day rule?
I don't hate it just because it seems like, you know, even with that, I feel like you get to points in the season where these relievers are all just gas. So I think kind of just having, you know, something where you know for a fact that they're going to get their rest because of that, I don't think it hurts. I mean, also, too, especially, and not that April games count any less, but, you know, maybe I'd be thinking a little bit differently if it, you know, we have a one game division lead and we're playing the Orioles in September. It's like, yeah, then maybe I'll use Clay for a third day. But if you're going to use him 3 days in a row now, it's like, where does that kind of end?
I'm kind of in the middle. So I think normally I'm cool with it. I do think that all of the high leverage guys should try to do it at least two or three times, because when, you know, think about the ALCS games, three, right, four, and five all in a row, World Series, true, three through five all in a row. So, you know, you think about Clay Holmes trying to do that for the first time in game five of the ALCS, a little scary.
No, that's fair. I kind of didn't think about it from that perspective. So no, I don't hate that either.
But I agree with you, like, April 21st is not the time. So I'm with you there. A guy that you have been all over from day one as kind of a diehard supporter, Anthony Volpe. He starts out on fire. We had talked about it, like, let's just keep him in the, around 6-7. Boone, really early, you know, in that Marlins series, moves him to leadoff. He's still been good, but has definitely slipped since then. I mean, is this just kind of like I told you so, where we thought this was too early to do?
I think it's just kind of the reason I didn't want to move him was not because I thought he wasn't ready for it or the best option. Like, I remember we said the best version of the Yankees has Anthony Volpe as the leadoff hitter, but it was just like he had like a 1.2 OPS at that point. So it's like he's due for a cold week. So he did have a bad week. I'm glad that at least his first handful of games in the leadoff spot, he was good, like in Cleveland. So I don't think it's a leadoff thing or a pressing thing. I think it's just the kid was off to an absolutely unsustainable start, and, you know, he had a bad week. So it was good to see him get the go-ahead hit on Friday, though. At least that's something positive to take out of it.
No, that was big, and he puts the ball in play, and that was a spot where I feel like in 2023 he's trying to hit a three-run home run, trying to go Luke Voit on us, and he knocks a nice single to left. I tend to agree with you. I think it's too early. I mean, if we get to Memorial Day and his average drops to 250, then I think we can maybe question it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And one of the reasons that Boone, which was interesting, said that he moved him is he wanted to move Glaber down to get Glaber going. That has not happened. Glaber's sitting at 195. Still no home runs. I mean, this seems – I know he got fouled a ball off his foot today, but overall – 100% mental, this looks like to me.
Oh, 100. I mean, you could see it on Glaber's face. And part of me is almost wondering, because I thought his at-bats looked really good as a leadoff hitter. Like, he was in the top three. I think it was like him, Soto, and Judge were all in the top five for pitches seen. So he was still working at-bats. It was just kind of like, all right, it's been 2 weeks. I'm almost wondering, like, Boone not often will straight up say, I'm trying to do this because I'm trying to get, you know, this guy going. I almost wonder, like, is that messing with Glaber? Is it the fact that he lost the leadoff role? Because it's very clearly in his head. It's all over his face when Glaber does this. I love the guy, but he's very frustrating because he gets so into his head so badly. So it's just like, I wonder if that even just set him off a little bit more, just the acknowledgement of how, you know, bad he's been.
And you're right, the fact that Boone said it publicly, which he never does. And with Glaber, like, I criticize him a lot and I feel bad because he does seem like such a wholesome, just good kid. He really is like a little kid out there, but the concentration lapses, the defensive miscues, throwing to the wrong base, when you combine that with, again, hitting under 200 with no power, it's hard not to criticize him.
I think we got to remember, too, it's a contract year for him, and I think – also, there's a very good chance, you know, he knows with the Yankees infield depth and the fact they're going to try and lock up Soto, there's a very good chance he's not playing here next year. So I think it's a combination of a lot of factors. He's in his head. Again, that's not an excuse. I mean, we've seen this before. It's frustrating. I just got to hope that, you know, he's able to break himself out of it like he was able to do the last couple years whenever this would happen, as opposed to 2021, where it kind of just snowballed and he had just a terrible year all around.
And it's interesting with the contract year, too. You could see it go one of two ways, right? You can have Judge, 60 homers, you play out of your mind and you're motivated. And then you see this where it's like he's clearly putting too much pressure on himself.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
The entire right side of the infield, and we'll just move right to Rizzo, has kind of been a disaster. Rizzo's at 232 with one homer, and I don't have the metrics, but to me he's been the worst defensive first baseman in the league too. Again, mental concussion. Where are you at with him?
I think it was actually JJ's tweet that I saw that he's attributing it to just having the yips in the field because that's where the injury happened. And I think that kind of makes sense because some of these plays in the Toronto series, there's a ball on the rail and the dugout wasn't even that far in. Like, it's a play that Anthony Rizzo makes 100 times out of 100 the last couple of years. Like, I don't even think it's a doubt, and he just lets it drop. So I think it's got to be something mental, because I know people have been saying he doesn't grade out as this elite first baseman anymore, like going back as far as when the Yankees traded for him, and that's fine, but he was making the routine plays, and even more so than that, he was scooping plenty of balls. Like, from my perspective, and maybe just because we're, you know, subjected to Luke Voit and Chris Carter and the revolving door of terrible first baseman the first couple years before he came here, he was a good first baseman. Like, no complaints. And this year, it's not just that he's making mistakes. He's making routine mistakes consistently.
And you called it. I had this written down, the scoops, because all we heard in 2021, 2 and 3 was that Rizzo saved so many errors by scooping those low throws from DJ or Torres, or back when it was IKF. And like, you notice, I think there's been 3 or 4 that he hasn't gotten. Whereas I feel like in those years, it was maybe one a year that he didn't get. And he's already had 4 or 5. So that's what I've noticed the most, too.
Absolutely. And then the bat is terrible, too. I mean, he just has no... He had the one homer against Toronto, which, you know, like you said, is kind of his patented wrap around the foul pole. But it's just like he's just not hitting the ball with authority at all.
And the 232 I can live with. But when you are a left-handed pull hitter with like an uppercut swing and you're playing at Yankee Stadium, like I need 30 bombs from you.
I at least just need the threat of a bomb, yes. right? Like yes. Don't say that in an airport if you're listening. You know, throw your headphones in if you're traveling. But JJ, not this episode's not for him. But it's just like he's a singles hitter now. Like it's literally like it's like you're watching like a lefty IKF up there almost. And I mean, maybe if he was hitting, you know, 280, 290, I'd be like, all right, you know, we could kind of figure out this trade off. But there's just no threat of him going deeper, hitting a double to the alley. Even it feels like
that's a great point. And not even many warning track fly balls. He's not lifting the ball. He's not pulling the ball that much. And him and Stanton are almost, I don't know, call it auditioning, but it's like, who's going to be the guy that hits behind, you know, the two big boppers, and neither of them have really ran away with it yet.
Yep. I agree.
Although like we said with Stanton, I think it's what we've signed up for. He's around 240. He's hitting those occasional home runs. I'm fine if he continues to do that. Yep. Want to just quickly we'll do some injury updates. So Cole, threw from 75 feet over the weekend, felt good. To me, June 1st is kind of starting to feel real. You figure he gets on a mound May 1st and he has a month to ramp.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I would love it. Just keep feeding me these positive updates. It's hard for me to even pay attention to any other injury update besides him, because it's just get him back on my team.
It's funny. They were going through like Peraza and I'm like, oh, I forgot about him. I'm just so focused on Cole. The other one, so this was like, you know, classic Yankees update. So DJ, we were originally told, was going to start the rehab assignment Friday or Saturday. They did an MRI and determined it wasn't healing enough. He is now going to start, I think, Tuesday, I think, in Somerset. Are you giving him everyday burn? Are you giving him some days over Torres? Like, how are you navigating, you know, third and second when he gets back?
Am I crazy to say I'm not even buying that he's going to be back after? I mean, because it makes no sense. If you looked at an MRI and you're saying that it hasn't healed enough, why can he start the rehab assignment like 2 days later? I just don't. I'm not understanding like what they're seeing here.
It feels like he's never going to be back. Because we've had, I mean, originally it was, oh, he might be ready for opening day. Mm-hmm. It's April 22nd. And especially we talked about with his foot stuff. So like, are you sitting here like, I'll see him when I see him kind of thing?
Absolutely. And I mean, I'd love to have him back. I mean, with the way Glaber and Rizzo are both going, you know, to be able to give them some days, you know, it would be awesome.
I didn't even think of that. You know, he plays first as well. And that's, so originally I was like, all right, Torres is, if he continues to struggle, you know, get DJ some burn at second. But when you think about DJ's age, his range has dropped a little bit, and the foot, like, I don't even know if they will let him play second.
Yeah, how much second has he even played now I think about it? And granted, a lot of that was based on Glaber being an everyday guy last year, or the last couple of years, obviously, and, you know, he, you know, doesn't really need off days. But I feel like he's really mostly just been a corner guy the past couple of years now.
I saw, I think it was Randy Randy Wilkins who tweeted, I think it was like he played 16 or 18 games at second in 2023. So not a lot. But the thing about playing him at third is like Oswaldo's been, you know, one of their best hitters. That's, I can't just sit Oswaldo down every day and slot in DJ at 30.
No, I totally agree. And Oswaldo Cabrera has just continued to show that, you know, I think he's an everyday player until, you know, he shows us that he's not. I think he's earned that. The good thing about him is you can finesse him into the lineup in a lot of different ways.
Between him and DJ, right, they can each play three infield positions. So a lot of flexibility there, especially if somebody else goes down.
Exactly.
And then Peraza, I think we were told it's going to be at least a couple of weeks away from a game. And that's a situation where like they've jerked him around so much. Like, I don't even know if he's on the roster when he gets back.
I doubt it. I don't think they even like the guy. I think they've tanked his value. Like, it would honestly have to be for me. I'd need to see him healthy and really put up some numbers at AAA. And obviously Glaber or, you know, Oswaldo or someone would really have to be slumping still for me to consider, all right, here's where Peraza fits.
He started one of those ALCS games in Houston in 2022. And mm-hmm. I remember watching him field, like, this is one of the best fielders I've ever seen. He looked fantastic. And the fact that they let him start an ALCS game and then just like never let him play again, the whole thing's just been weird.
They started three shortstops in an ALCS that they got swept in four games. Like, that was crazy.
wild stuff. And then, so coming up this week, so just as a heads up, Monday is a day game. It's a 1 o'clock game because of Passover for your planning purposes. Happy Passover, everybody. But they'll have Rodon, Stroman, Clark, and Nestor against an awful Athletics team that's fucking moving to Vegas and barely has a stadium to play in. Like, they didn't sweep the Marlins. Like, I really want to sweep the Athletics. I think it's doable.
No, absolutely. I mean, four-game sweeps are tough, but I probably would be upset if it's anything besides a sweep. I mean, anything besides a sweep, 3 out of 4, fine. Anything less than 3 out of 4, that is a problem.
Rodon should cook them. Stroman should cook them. Clark should keep him in the game. And 3 out of 4 I can live with. But when you think about, like, I know it's hard to sweep in baseball, but the times that are – it's easier to sweep is when you have – the Marlins at home, the White Sox at home, the Athletics at home. You look at, you know, 4 or 5 different series throughout the year. This is a top 3 sweepable series for me.
The best teams get fat on teams that are not very good. If you look at the 2019 Yankees, what won them the division, they lose 2 out of 3 to the Orioles, who were terrible at the time, to start the season. They win their next 16 against them. Like, that's how you win divisions. You beat up on bad teams.
Yeah, and like the Phillies, I have a bunch of friends that are Phillies fans. They swept this week. I think it was they swept the White Sox and the Rockies. They went 6-0 this week. And like you said, you got to get fat on them, especially we don't have any cupcakes in our division to get fat on anymore.
No, not at all. Not even close.
And then no off days till May 6th, like we said. So the Yanks will have 4 against Oakland at home. They go to Milwaukee. It's kind of nice. Don't have to worry about any rainouts because they have a dome. 4 in Baltimore. I'm already kind of looking ahead, to be honest, to those 4 in Camden Yards. That is going to be massive. Are you going? Are you going to head down for any of those? Or
no, I don't have any plans to do that. You going, or do you think? Or
nah, not? Monday through Thursday, it's a tough. Like, if it was a weekend, absolutely, but it's a tough sell, you know, weekdays in April.
No, I agree.
Little programming note. So JJ and I will have RDT from Barstool on in a week to preview the Orioles series. So that'll be a lot of fun. But look, we had a 3-3 week. We've gotten through a solid chunk teeth of the schedule that's challenging. Got to get fat, like Nick said, on these 4 games against Oakland. You got anything else?
No, I'm all good. Vibes are high again. Felt like they were gonna come crashing down in, you know, Game 3 in Toronto, but they managed to salvage the week.
We did. I hope everybody has a great week, and I will see you at the parade.